Chapter 21. But Daijong, opening the gates to the north is not going to provide me a usable, skilled labor pool, the CEO of South Korea's largest auto manufacturer asserted before taking a puff on a large Cuban cigar. Sitting across a mahogany cocktail table, Daijong Kang shook his head politely as a long-legged waitress brought a second round of drinks to the table. Their conversation halted while the young Chaibel Club waitress placed their drinks in front of them. The club was a private enclave for Korea's super-rich and powerful, a secure and neutral meeting place where huge deals were hammered out over kimchi and martinis. The aristocratic club was appropriately housed on the 100th floor of the world's tallest building, the recently completed International Business Center Tower located in western Seoul. You must consider the lower labor wages. Retraining costs would be minor and recouped in no time. My staff has analyzed the prospects and told me I could save $20 million a year in labor costs alone if we could draw on manpower from North Korea at their current equivalent wage rate. I can only imagine what your potential auto manufacturing savings would be. Suppose instead of expanding your Ulsan manufacturing facility, you built an entirely new plant in the northern province of Yangang. How would that improve your competitiveness on the world markets, not to mention open access to the northern consumers? Yes, but it is not so easy for me. I have unions to contend with, as well as capital budget constraints. I certainly can't throw people out on the street at Ulsan and rehire workers from the north at half the price. Besides, there's a whole mindset that we'll need to contend with if we bring on the northern worker. After all, no socialist state was ever admired for its devotion to quality output. Nothing that a dose of retraining and a taste of capitalistic wages wouldn't quickly solve, Kang countered. Perhaps. But face it, there is no consumer market for automobiles in the North. The country is an economic mess, and the average man on the street is primarily concerned with putting a meal on the table. The disposable income just isn't there to aid my industry. Yes, but you are looking at the present, not the future. Our two countries are on an inescapable collision course towards unification, and those that are prepared today will reap the riches tomorrow. You had the vision to expand your manufacturing presence to India and the United States, and now you are a major player in the auto industry. Have the vision of a unified Korea and help place our homeland at the forefront of world leadership. The auto exec blew a large puff of blue cigar smoke towards the ceiling as he contemplated Kang's words. I can see the wisdom in your thinking. I'll have my strategy office look into it, perhaps work up some contingencies. I'm not sure I have the stomach for dealing with the political issues and approvals with both the North and South Korean governments to establish a presence in the North just yet, he hedged. Kang set down his vodka gimlet and smiled. I have friends and influence in both governments that can come to your aid when the time is right, he replied with understatement. Most gracious of you. And there is something I can do for you, my good friend, in return, the exec replied with a smirk. The resolution in the National Assembly to expel the U.S. military from our soil is gaining momentum, Kang answered. Your support of the resolution would sway a good deal of political opinion. The embarrassing news incidents with the American military personnel are admittedly making things touchy in some areas of our business. However, I am not convinced the security concerns regarding an American force withdrawal are unfounded. Of course they are, Kang lied. The American presence promotes aggression from the North. Their removal will only stabilize relations between our countries and allow our ultimate reunification. You really think it's the right thing to do? It could make us very rich men, Songwoo, Kang replied. We already are, the auto executive laughed as he snuffed out his cigar in a porcelain ashtray. We already are. K Kang shook hands goodbye to his fellow industrialist, then took a quick, ear-popping elevator ride 100 floors down to the lobby of the sprawling business center. An accompanying bodyguard attired in black spoke into a handheld radio, and seconds later a red Bentley Arnage RL limousine pulled up to the curb to collect them. As Kang rode silently in the leather-bound back seat, he allowed a sense of self-congratulations to overtake him. The plan of events was going better than expected. The staged murder of a young girl by the American airman had caused widespread outrage across the country. Mothers were staging numerous protests outside of American military bases, while a mob of loud and riotous college students had marched on the U.S. Embassy. Kang's corporate administrative staff had orchestrated an intense letter-writing campaign that bombarded a score of local politicians with demands to oust the foreign armed forces. And Kang's extortion of several National Assembly leaders had initiated the political resolution that South Korea's president would soon have to contend with. Now he was working the business leadership community, which had the real clout with both the media and the members of the National Assembly. The North Korean leadership in Pyongyang was doing their part in the deception by talking up reunification on every public front. As a goodwill gesture signaling improved relations, they temporarily lifted a majority of the travel restrictions to the North. With additional fanfare, they announced that an army armored division was being pulled back from the DMZ in a peaceful move, though failed to admit that they were just being repositioned a short distance away. Facts to the contrary, a peaceful and friendly front was being promoted in the spirit that a Madison Avenue ad exec would admire. The Bentley drove into downtown Seoul, turning through the gates of a nondescript low-rise glass building marked with a small sign stating simply, Kang Industries, Semiconductor Division. The luxury car continued past a crowded parking lot, then down a small alleyway that led to the back of the building and the shoreline of the Han River. The driver stopped in front of a private dock where Kang's Italian motor yacht was tied up. A servant welcomed Kang and his bodyguard aboard as the engines were started, and before he had entered the main cabin, the yacht was cast off for its commute back to Kang's estate. Kang's assistant, Kwan, bowed as the tycoon entered a small interior cabin he used as a working office aboard the boat. As was his tradition, Kwan provided daily briefings to his boss, either on board the yacht or at the estate, at the end of each workday. A pile of two-page briefing reports that bested the intelligence reports of many Western leaders lay stacked on the table. Kang quickly scanned the assorted briefings, which detailed everything from forecast quarterly earnings at his telecom subsidiary to military exercises of the South Korean army to personal profiles of which politician was cheating on his wife. Items related to subversive activities or from protected sources were printed on a special orange paper which dissolved when immersed in water and were destroyed immediately after Kang's viewing. After addressing a number of business issues, Kang rubbed his eyes and asked, "What have we heard from Tongju on the Baekje?" Kwan's face visibly paled. "We have a problem with the marine equipment for the recovery operation," he replied tentatively. "The Japanese submersible we leased was damaged while being transported to the Baekje. It was the fault of some careless dock workers." Kwan watched as a vein stood out on Kang's temple and began throbbing violently. The anger rose quickly in the man, but came out in a controlled hiss. "This bungling must stop. First, we lose two of our agents in America on a simple assassination attempt, and now this. How long before repairs to the damage can be completed?"
"At least 3 months. The Shinkai is out," Kwan said quietly.
"We have a timetable to adhere to," Kang replied with agitation. "We are talking days, not months."
"I have initiated a complete search of available submersibles in the region. The other potential Japanese deep water submersible is undergoing a refit, and all the Russian vessels are currently operating in Western waters. The nearest available submersible that is suitable for the recovery is a Ukrainian vessel currently operating in the Indian Ocean. It will take 3 weeks to have her on site, however.
That is too late, Kang mumbled. The momentum we have built in the National Assembly for the referendum is peaking. There will be a forced vote within a few weeks. We must act before then. I need not remind you that we had committed to strike during the G8 assemblage, he said, his eyes simmering with anger.
An anguished silence filled the room. Then Quan ventured to speak. Sir, there may be another option. We were told that an American scientific research vessel has been operating in Japanese waters with a deep-sea submersible. I was able to track the vessel down earlier today as it was taking on fuel in Osaka. It is a NUMA ship, fully capable of deep water recovery.
NUMA again, Kang mused.
His face pinched up as he contemplated the successful foundation he had laid for the project and the potential risk of delay. Finally, he nodded his head at Quan. It is imperative that we initiate the recovery as soon as possible. Obtain the American submersible, but do it quietly and without incident.
Tongju is there to lead the operation, Quan replied confidently. At your instructions, he will proceed. He will not fail us.
See to it, Kang replied, his dark eyes boring through Quan with seething intolerance.